is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Two hours in, 1 hour to go here on Cashing Out. I'm Doug Kazarian. Dustin Sweetelson will be back in the studio tomorrow on Monday night through the rest of the week. It's been a fun weekend in sports. We had the NFL preseason week one, full slate. Finally, so we got all the teams. By the way, if I'm not mistaken, favorites went 3-14 against the spread, if you include the Hall of Fame game, and then also all the 16 favorites in week one. So chalk, or dogs were barking, I should say. And speaking of streaks, Paulie Howard, who does Follow the Money, Monday through Friday, told me this, 14 straight unders in the WNBA. Remember there was on that run of overs, and that it was everyone was scoring and then some market correction, but some of this is just the pace slowing down a little bit. So we'll see what happens on Monday. By the way, I love the Valkyries tomorrow laying the points against the Dallas Wings, but I got to see if Jessica Shepherd, the starting center for Dallas, is returning from injury. AZ Fudd, the number one pick out of UConn, still not back for the Wings. And Isaiah James, I think, is also out. But we're talking, continuing our discussion with baseball, as Logan Windsor rejoins us via the Progressive guest line. And he is based in Milwaukee area in Wisconsin, handicapping a lot of baseball. And you and I have known each other, and we discuss baseball a lot. I think this is fascinating. You told me about this betting angle, and I didn't even know it existed, at least some of it. So I like the Padres tomorrow. I think they're just playing really good ball. I think they've won 6 of 7. Mets are actually been okay of late, even though they're without Soto. The pitching matchup on paper you would think would favor the Metropolitans with Nolan McLean, the youngster, going. He's been up and down this year, all things considered. And Walker Buehler's not vintage Walker Buehler, but he's had his moments here. I like the Padres because I think the lineup is starting to hit. The back end of the lineup's been so good of late, and I just think they have a lot of pressure they put on starting pitchers. But you have some stats and a unique betting angle and a prop that I just love once you told me about it. Feed the people.
Yeah, so we were both in agreement that the Padres money line has incredible value at plus money. I think they're overhyping how good the Mets have been. Mets traded all their relievers away. Devin Williams got banished to the IL, so he can't pitch anymore. And they used their bullpen pretty heavy in their last series. And obviously we know how the Padres are with their bullpen, with Mari Hone and Mason Miller, and they were really low usage in their series as well. So from that angle, we both agree the Padres are great. But the first five angle is a really interesting for the Mets. And there is a double result bet in this game that I really like, taking the Mets in the first five and then the Padres to win the game. You often see this in the NBA and the NFL with first half then full game, but you can sometimes get this for plus 800 to plus 900 in MLB. Now, we know Walker Buehler is not the greatest pitcher in the world. In the first and second time through the order, which is usually the first five innings, he's giving up a .251 batting average, while Nolan McLean giving up a .180 batting average, one of the best in baseball first and second time through the order. But once the third time comes, where the Padres have been killing righties, it gets really bad for Nolan this season. Third time through the order, .311 batting average, .882 OPS, and 5 home runs in just 119 at-bats. His strikeout rate goes down, his walk rate goes up, and his ISO, which is how good you hit the ball, is extremely up third time through the order. So McLean might shove for the first two innings, and the Mets may have the lead because they might get one or two runs off Buehler, or they would just be tied, which also cashes this bet as well. But once the bullpens get into effect and once McLean goes third time through the order in the sixth, possibly seventh inning, I think this Padres lineup that is crushing home runs right now and is getting hot at the right time can really destroy this Mets team. They usually do pretty well in New York. So depending on how you look at it, I really like the Padres tomorrow.
Okay, so I want to talk more about, so this conventionally in football and basketball is known as the double result. One team has the lead. You pick, like, I don't know, in football, the Cowboys to lead at halftime and then the Eagles to win the game. And so it's basically a two-leg parlay of minus a half in the first half, right? So what's it called when Correct. You can find it from a sports book offering it in baseball?
It's the same thing. It's called double result. Double result. Sometimes they'll hide this bet in the first five, or you just make the parlay yourself while you click either first five or you click the -0.5 first five spread, and you pair it with an opposite money line. Some books have great reverse correlation on this for just first five and first five Mets, which would push at zero runs or a tie. and then you do Padres money line, I was seeing it like plus 500, plus 600 on FanDuel. But sometimes they offer it just as a normal like special prop, and those odds vary dramatically. So as soon as they open tomorrow, I'm going to be scouring the web for the best odds. Anything above plus 700, and I'm going to be all over it.
Okay, so I just clicked some stuff for a parlay, a two-leg parlay on DraftKings, just the first side I picked. And, okay, we have some loud noise here. Maybe a fire drill? Okay. I didn't do anything. But it's plus 550 if you do the Mets first five and the Padres for the game. I didn't even know they would even allow this, but yeah. Now, you couldn't do Padres, or Mets, could you? Does it allow you?
Depends. Okay. Sometimes you can.
So it's minus 110.
DraftKings is really
so
weird with those same-game parlays.
Yeah, like it doesn't really let you move it much. So like yeah, I see what you're saying. It is sort of a double result. But, and you were saying a second ago that you still win. That's if you do a plus a half for the first five?
So yeah, if you do the plus 0.5 first five, yes, you win. Okay. And then if you do the double result, just Mets and Padres, and you have ties included, you should be okay either through a push or winning the bet in general.
Okay, so ties included. Okay, so something to keep in mind, some books, and maybe some of these props are posted on game day, double result. So as the market sort of settles, and then some of the corresponding derivative props will be offered along those lines. I think that's a fascinating way to attack some of this. And look, there's always angles. And you mentioned it with the stats of third time through the lineup for the Padres. Certain pitchers are much better. You know, that was always the Roky Sasaki bugaboo, the third time through the lineup. But we figured out it was more tipping pitches. So he got like a hockey glove as a mitt. And that's been why he's been so much better the last, I don't know, 4 to 5 starts. I mentioned the wraparound series, Logan. So the Rays have lost the first 3 games at home with the Orioles. Monday is the series finale, and this is a Rays team that had by far the best record at home in all of baseball. So the Orioles have come in there and taken care of business and then some. So now we have McClanahan returning from injury, Brandon Young going for the O's, and why do you have faith in the Rays to, you know, avoid the sweep here and salvage at least a game?
Well, this is one of my favorite systems, home teams avoiding the sweep. Right. This is a really weird one, too, because this is coming around to Monday. Brandon Young has been really, really bad on the road and has given up some high home run totals. If he can't get strikeouts, he usually doesn't succeed, and the Rays are striking out the fewest than any team in baseball. But, I mean, I've been all over McClanahan all season. I was really bummed when he got hurt. I thought he was going to be out way longer than this, but he's really going to be out only 2 weeks. He made a quick rehab start, which you don't often see with just such a short absence. Went 3 innings of perfect baseball against Memphis. I don't think McClanahan's going to go super deep, but he's also getting a 12.5 outs line, and he pitched 5 days ago. I think that's a little egregious. I think McClanahan's probably pitch count's going to be around 75 to 80, and he's usually getting 10 to 12 pitches per inning. I think they'll stretch him to 5, and then I think the bullpen, because if they're leading, they haven't used a lot of their high leverage relievers. As long as they're leading by after the first 5, I think they're going to be home sailing to the 9th. And I always love taking, or at least fading righties in Tampa Bay because of that top 3 lineup with Junior, Yandy, and especially Jonathan Aranda. So I think this is a really good bounce back spot for the Rays.
Yeah. I mean, I thought they'd roll here, but they got touched up early and often, and the Orioles kind of smoked them. But I do like home teams avoiding the sweep, especially when they're so good, like Tampa, division leader, and particularly so good at home, like they've been all season. Yes, the wraparound series element is make it a little wrinkle, but I think that's decent value. And like you said, you like the first five because you don't know how long McClanahan is going to go. Logan, awesome stuff as always. I now know about double result bets in baseball. You've created a degenerate monster, perhaps. I'm going to go take a look at it on game day moving forward. But we really appreciate your time and your insight. Thank you again for joining us.
Appreciate it, Doug. And I hope those Dodgers figure it out. Because the Brew Crew's coming.
They are. The Brew Crew got the best of the Blue Crew for sure. That's professional handicapper Logan Windsor joining us via the Progressive guest line. You can check him out on X or Twitter at WizBets, the Z. So you got 2 Z's in there. So interesting stuff as well. We're talking college football in about 6 minutes. And we have the AP poll is going to be released tomorrow. I have some thoughts on the AP poll. I actually really like the preseason AP poll, but with a caveat. So I'll tell you about that, but I really want to tell you about something that's really fun, and you can get some great value because Cam Schlittler at 300-1 was the best value on this draft that we had for the baseball season, and the pro football one is coming up in a matter of days. VSiN is on the clock for the second annual pro football futures draft. 13 VSiN hosts and guests face off in a fantasy football style snake draft hosted by Dustin Sweetelson, and every pick doubles as a handicapping breakdown you can use. Win totals, division winners, player props, stat leaders. Last year's competitors are all back for round two, joined by three newcomers stepping into the futures draft room for the first time. Former wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson, comedian and sports commentator Nick Bakay, you might know him as Advantage Push, and the guru, John Hansen. Don't watch the futures draft, profit from it. Tune in Thursday, August 20th, so that's just a few days from now, 5 Eastern, only on VSiN, the sports betting network. So much like your fantasy drafts out there, you can pick a future, whether it's MVP odds, division odds, you name it, Super Bowl odds, and they go in order like a snake draft like we were talking about, but it's about the value. It's wagers. So like I said, in the baseball draft, Matt Youmans took Cam Schlittler at 300-1. So really impressive wager, and obviously he's a minus money favorite right now. So check that out on Thursday, 5 Eastern, hosted by Dustin Sweetelson. We've talked a lot of NFL. Now we're going to talk some college. As I mentioned, the AP Top 25 poll is going to be released on Monday, and I love it. But we're also going to be joined by a college football handicapper, maybe some teams flying under the radar and a little too high that he's looking to fade. We'll pick his brain as we talk a little college football as we roll on here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
I am fired up to talk some college football for the next about 15, 20 minutes. Welcome in to Cashing Out. I am Doug Kazarian. Dustin back in the hot seat tomorrow on Monday night throughout the rest of the week. We are at the beautiful Circa Resort and Casino here in downtown Las Vegas. We had a fire alarm not too long ago, but that's the beauty of live TV, so to speak. College football season is basically here, right? We have all these training camps. We're going to have games in August that actually count. Just want to remind you that college football season is here. Betting it blind is a losing strategy. Get the VSiN College Football Betting Guide free with VSiN Pro. It has previews of all 138 FBS teams, preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds. That's not all. VSiN Pro also gets you the NFL Betting Guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. It's a ton, and try it today for just $9.99. Or lock it in full year, save 50% off with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. And it really is thorough. I mean, that's the most important thing. Even if you don't place a wager, it's good to check it out and just get caught up on everything that's happened in the offseason in college football, because a ton has happened. It's not just Lane Kiffin going to LSU. However, we're going to discuss that and much more as we welcome in our next guest, Zach Bigelow of College Football Handicapper, as he joins us via the Progressive guest line. You can check him out on Twitter at CoachBigsCFB. Because, Zach, you played at Northern Colorado. You also have coached there. You've coached at Tulsa, Oregon State. So approaching things through a different lens than some handicappers. And we're going to have the AP Top 25 poll out tomorrow, the preseason one. And a lot of people have criticized it over the years. I think it's awesome. As long as people remain fluid after the first week of results, I have no problem moving a team that was 10th that lost out of the top 25. Like, you have to have huge swings. Now, week 10, if some team's in the top 10 and lose, it's fine. But just stay fluid. It's like, oh, we can only move in three spots. Why? It was a farce, fictitious, like, ranking coming in because it was all based on offseason. So how do you feel about this preseason top 25?
Well, my biggest pet peeve is if the champ comes back with something that you think can contend again, they got to stay number one until you knock them back off. So okay. I'd always like to see Indiana, somebody like that. They got to be one until you knock them back off. My biggest thing with it is like, how are people evaluating it? Like, is it a true power rating of who you think will win? You know, at this point in the season, everybody's looking at their schedule darlings of who they think is going to overperform their win total just because of a schedule, but not necessarily are they any good. And so those guys sneak into the top 25. So that's where I always struggle with it, as I'm looking at all these different voters and I'm like to know how they're defining it. So not a number that I'm keeping a high eye on, but no, it loves to rile everybody up at this point of the year and give people to talk about. But hey, at least we're talking about ball this time of year. I'm for it.
No, it's a great point. Is it a power rating or a projection, right? So sometimes people are talking MVP during the course of like the NBA or football season. It's like, well, the betting market is projections, factors in maybe the last four opponents, in this case, the Heisman Trophy, or are we talking right now, the current standings, the pecking order of said Heisman Trophy race? But it's a great, great question. I think these sports love the leave it up to the voters, because that generates a lot of discussion, the hot takes. But let's talk about some
teams. Anytime we can pass the buck.
Yeah, that too. Let's talk about some teams. I have a list here of teams you're high on, teams you're lower on than the betting market per se. And I think it's funny because I think this Ole Miss team is really interesting. Last night we had a guest saying, you know, they may have looked a lot better than they are with that boost of energy with Lane Kiffin scorning them and they go into the playoff. And I was not a fan of Pete Golding from a head coaching decision-making standpoint. Obviously, he knows what he's doing to a certain extent because he did well, but I don't think he like outsmarted Kirby Smart. I think Kirby Smart outdumbed him in that matchup. With Golding going for two in the first quarter on the PAT instead of the PAT was beyond dumb. You just don't do that. You don't chase points, especially in college when the PAT distance is so short compared to the NFL. Now, just because Kirby completely botched the clock management at the end of the game and they escaped and he had the dynamic quarterback in Chambliss doesn't mean that decision in the first quarter was a good one. With that being said, some people make some mistakes here and there. I'm curious, with Pete Golding as a factor, because Lane Kiffin, you know, certainly got a lot of credit for that offense last year and the year before. Why are you high on Ole Miss in relation to the market?
I think we've seen this story before where everybody's not as high on the hire when they replace a great staff. But that foundation is still kind of there. And usually it's that second, third year where it really starts to fall off. But that head coach can come in and give hype that hope that next year. So at a minimum, I think it's this. And to answer your question, it's Chambliss. Yeah. He is my number one rated quarterback coming this year. I don't think he's going number one overall in the draft next year. Not that. But I think he's magic in a bottle. What he's done, his story is incredible. And when Ole Miss opened spring ball last year, Trinidad wasn't there. So this is his first spring ball. Remember, he wasn't supposed to be the projected starter. So when I think people want to be down on Ole Miss, they worry about replacing Lane and Charlie Weiss Jr. and the coordinating, the play calling, and how well is John David Baker going to do? I don't care. Chambliss is going to fix that. The weapons are enough around him that I think he just elevates everything around him. And then what's exciting about me of making this comeback, elite defenses travel, right? We've seen it with Venables and Oklahoma. You can be that good and bring a defense to the playoffs. Golding, all that transfer portal money went to the defense this year. And now that identity is shifting. So if Chambliss is your stopgap, you don't have to worry about the changes on staff on offense. He's just that magical and the best player in college football. Golding gets to focus on defense. Golding, in my model, I really like to evaluate coaching staffs. And in my model, his three best years, when he really stands out as elite defensive coordinator, he's got to have the D-line to do it. He does this year. The other portal defense, the talent portal he brought in defensively, I think they'll be elite defense. Elite defenses travels. Elite defenses don't have bad weeks. Trinidad picks up the pieces, so that's why I'm high on Ole Miss. I got 7.5 over on them earlier. I wouldn't play the 8.5 today. I'd rather just take the plus money to make the playoff. My actually favorite way to play this is play Trinidad to win the Heisman. Because if Ole Miss is getting to the playoffs, then that's how you make the money and that's your bigger bet. You can still get that at like 10-1.
Okay. Yeah. And obviously those are different payouts. Like you said, 8.5 is different than make the playoff, the yes, no. And then you said around 10-1 for the Heisman. I like that thought process. You saw the schedule. Obviously it's SEC based. They also face Louisville in the opener, albeit at home. That game in Oxford in September will certainly be hyped. I imagine game day, college game day might be going to Oxford that weekend. Safe to say. Another team, but specifically a coach I want to focus on is Narduzzi with Pitt. This guy hasn't seen a field goal he doesn't like all year. The guy loves the kick. I had him. I remember the game, I think it was at Penn State. They were down seven with like 3.5 to go. And he kicked a fourth down on like the 2-yard line. He kicked a field goal. It's like, you still need a touchdown when you're down seven. You're not down six. Either way, it was stupid. I just don't think he gets it. Now, with that being said, his teams have played well in some big spots. They sort of rise to the occasion. I think the floor is higher than you would think when you mention Narduzzi, but he just loves the field goals, loves to rely on defense. I'm skeptical anytime there's a game involved, but I've also been burned fading him and trying to bet against him. So why are you high on Pitt this coming season?
It's going to sound counterintuitive, so stick with me.
Okay.
I don't know that anybody got hurt in the portal more than Pitt this year. The free tool that I put out on my X is my depth and value chart, which will allow you to evaluate every player in the two deep for all FBS teams. And then as an overall roster, how do I view them both from a production and a talent standpoint? If you take everybody that Pitt lost in the portal because they don't have the NIL money, this would be everybody's sneaky playoff team. They'd be ranked as one of the top 15 rosters in all of football. That's factored into the number and why people don't want to bet over on this team. But you have to go and look. I think it was The Athletic this year did a survey anonymously of all the P4 coaches. And what they were trying to figure out is what staff best develops players in college football. And number one was Narduzzi. I don't care what just left because he develops it really, really well. Cade Bell settling in as the offensive coordinator. I think they're going to continue to be more and more exciting as an offense. Last year, they rated really, really exciting as an explosiveness. It was just the efficiency that was missing. Those numbers really went up when they switched to the true freshman quarterback, Mason. And his numbers, if you go and look at it, look like a young Arch Manning or a young Lenora Sellers in a smaller conference. They did get crushed. My downfall here is I wish they would have done more to replace the receiver room. I'm not sure about the talent around him, but I really like the offensive line. I trust Narduzzi to keep developing talent on defense. I think the offense will be explosive, so I'm over on Pitt this year.
Okay, so you think they're going to grow. I think actually North Carolina is the team that teams sleep on in terms of developing talent. So the issue that I heard from my colleagues, former colleagues at ESPN and everything, is that their recruiting, their eye for talent was really bad. They would go search for recruits, and they weren't finding that those recruits were getting, you know, pursued by ACC schools. It was MAC schools that they were competing with. So they had a bad eye for talent. But once they got there in Chapel Hill, Belichick knew how to coach him up. He was covering a lot at the end of the season. So he developed some guys, and it was just that they were bad, which kind of matches what happened at the end of his New England tenure. He was bad at drafting and things like that. But he still knows how to coach. I haven't written them off entirely, but obviously the shine is certainly not there for Belichick. You have a couple other angles I want to discuss. You like Pitt and their opener against Ohio laying the points, but you're also fading Texas A&M for the upcoming season. This is a team that beat Notre Dame, went to the playoff last year. Everyone loves their coach. They're kind of a chic pick in terms of the new sort of program in the SEC, and that's Texas A&M. I'm going to pick your brain as to why. He is Zach Bigelow. I'm Doug Kazarian. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out. You're on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are less than 2 weeks away from college football games. Week zero is 2 weeks from this past Saturday. Think about that. How awesome is it to have actual games? Yeah, the NFL preseason's underway, and those serve a purpose. Don't get me wrong, not just the betting, but it's good to see some guys get a few series, some rookies get some playing time. But college football, the madness is just around the corner. Welcome in to downtown Las Vegas here at the Circa Resort and Casino. I am Doug Kazarian. Dustin Sweetelson will be hosting Monday through Friday this coming week. Right now, let's rejoin with Zach Bigelow, college football handicapper, as he joins us again via the Progressive guest line. You can catch him on Twitter, Coach Biggs CFB. Zach, we're talking about teams that have caught your eye, that you're expecting good things out of the gates. You like Pitt, minus the a little bit over two touchdowns against Ohio in its opener, but you think Texas A&M is going to underdeliver this year. Obviously, high expectations after beating Notre Dame last year, then going to the playoff. But now comes expectations for the Aggies, even though their coach is beloved. What makes you a little down on them at College Station?
It always starts with the quarterback. Marcel Reed is coming back, but he's got a new offensive coordinator, Holloman Wiggins, which I hate to speak poorly of because I coach with him at the University of Tulsa, and he's a great guy, but he's never called plays at any collegiate level. So that's tough coming out of the gate. Biggest thing with Reed in the five measuring stick games, when you look at Notre Dame, Auburn, LSU, Texas, and Miami, 58% completion, four touchdowns, 8 interceptions. That's rough. Here's why that's important. Last year, in that great season, they went 11-2 without beating a single SEC team that finished with a winning conference record. Not one. The best win was against Missouri. So only true quality win came against Notre Dame when CJ Carr was a freshman. And you could see him go from freshman to shining star really quickly just inside that game. Play that game later in the year, what happens? So when you think about Reed, and now this year, the schedule's way different. It's much more difficult, and he's going to have to be playing a lot more top-tier defense. I don't know, with a new offensive coordinator who've never called plays before, I don't really have a lot of confidence in the offense, especially because they lost four starters, including a kid that just got drafted to the Raiders, Trey Zun, that I coached in high school. Four offensive line starters have gone to the NFL, and they were really, really, really good. They did reload in the portal with who they got at the offensive line spot, but that's a group that's got to gel quickly with the quarterback, who I think is a little overrated. Receiver room is really, really good, but you add all those up, and I don't see the magic happening again, not with that ninth conference game in the SEC.
Yeah, that was certainly a topic at SEC Media Days. Their win total for the coming season's 8.5, under minus 115, minus 120. The schedule, like you said, 9 conference games. They should be 3-0 out of the gates, but I love Kenny Dillingham. Now, can he win that game with Arizona State at College Station? Probably not, but I wouldn't pencil it in as an automatic win. Although they did lose Sam Levitt to, obviously, LSU. Now, A&M does go to LSU in their fourth game. They do have to go to Missouri. That won't be automatic win or anything, because in Como, they've been pretty tough. Drinkwitz has a good program going on there. They're also at Bama, at South Carolina, at Oklahoma, and home to Texas. You need 4 losses in there. Are you expecting 5, or do you think we get to 4 in that whole sort of mess in October, November?
Yeah, I'm definitely on the under. South Carolina, I think I want to auto write that up as a loss. There's no way the Gamecocks, after what they did last year, being up 33 and still losing that game, let Texas A&M come into South Carolina and lose that one again. So LSU, at LSU, that'll be tough. I think that is right around the Ole Miss game, so that's going to be difficult. But then, yeah, we're still looking at Alabama versus Tennessee, at Oklahoma, Texas. They're 0-2 versus Texas since they've gotten there, and Texas is probably going to be desperate for a win to get into the playoffs there, so you know that's going to be important. Something I have liked starting to mark when I'm going through my process is, like you said, you really quickly look at that schedule and see somebody that goes 3-0. Even if you don't get through that LSU game, Arkansas, Missouri, I'm down on Missouri as well. Really easily you could start 5-1. Anymore, you get updated win totals in the middle of the season, so I start to look at spots where I can pick off a better number. So if somebody starts trying to hang a 9.5 on me because they're seeing a 6-0 or a 5-1 Texas A&M, and I know it's coming on the second half of the schedule, that's where I can make some money in the second half. Typically, that's known as the Mike Locksley special, and you only play that on Maryland, but are other ways to play that in college football.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're 5-1 and you're A&M and Mike Elko, he's not losing to Citadel in the next game. So 6-1 is probably
6-1
what they're going to be. But you're right, like, I mean, look, Kentucky coach is talking a lot. Former OC, I believe it, Oregon comes in. I mean, they got the 12th man out there, but you're right. That LSU game is tricky. It's a week for the Tigers, that is. It's a week after they go to Ole Miss, but maybe it's a must-have for them. There's some tricky spots, but yeah. I mean, look, Mike Elko's really solid, did well at Duke, did well in his coordinator stops before that. We shall see how that plays out. Another team you're looking to fade, and it's interesting because Cal's quarterback, they have this former Hawaii quarterback, comes in as a freshman. They let Mendoza go in the portal, and he goes to Indiana, and we know he wins the Heisman as the number one pick. Well, JKS is back at Berkeley. They went through some coaching changes themselves, even though I thought Wilcox had done a decent enough job with the Bears. But they're reloading here, and they're obviously in the weird sort of schedule travel with the ACC. Why are you fading Cal this year?
This is an opportunity where I think when everybody knows the quarterback's name and they want to get high on the team just because of that and everything else around them is down, this is an opportunity that I think to be sharper than everybody and hit the under. And I have hit the under with Cal. I do like JKS. What he did as a true freshman is impressive, but there are some advanced metric numbers that make you raise an eyebrow.
Yes.
I have his positive play rate at just 43%. When I look at his EPA per play, I had him 80th out of 133 starting quarterbacks. And if I look at my own opponent adjusted numbers for returning quarterbacks, I have him 51st out of 63. So there's a lot of things to be excited about and some great highlights. But even without that, brand new staff, offensive coordinator coming from the NFL who's never called plays at all. Again, I'm really looking at how the staffs fit when I'm evaluating a team and I'm handicapping, and I just don't like them. I did say with Texas A&M, you start with the quarterback, but then right after that, you go to the trenches. People are really excited. They talk about JKS, and then they talk about what they brought in around him at receiver and running back in the portal. And it's skill. There's some stuff there. But if you don't have time to throw it and you can't win in the trenches, you don't win ball games. That offensive line was horrible last year, and I don't think it got a lot better. That defensive line, not good last year either, and I don't think it got a lot better. When you look at what the defense is returning on top of it all, I think if you look up all the stats, it's one of the least returning stats. I think there's four FBS starts among the projected starters on defense. So when I see that JKS is great, yep, that's good. The skills around him, I don't trust the all offensive line to block him. I don't trust what the defense is going to bring. I'm sure Josh Poy is going to get that going for sure. He's a defensive minded guy. Defensive coordinator also came from the NFL. Not a lot of college experience either. So questions around staff. I think this is a true year zero for them. They're going to have to figure it out. JKS will help us hit a lot of overs this year. I'm excited about doing that with a leaky defense and them playing from behind. But overall, on a win total, this has moved since I played it, but I'd still played it under 6.5.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of JKS. I loved watching him. Also, he was on late at night for those home games, so not a lot of options. And there's things to fall in love with, but he did have trouble. He had some interceptions to the flat that he didn't put enough arc on it. Just stuff that, yes, you're supposed to evolve and get better and things like that, but those are basic throws he was missing. So as much as he made some of the impossible throws look easy and his speed at times, I do think he's definitely mistake prone now with a new offense. But I want to ask you, and I know we're against the clock here, you talked about a couple of times there's new play callers. How do those guys get ready? Do they just call plays in practice? Do they go back in previous games and script and say what they would have done? I mean, how does a guy, when there's no preseason like the NFL, how does someone who's never called plays get adjusted as quickly as possible?
I think you hope you have a good head coach, because that's one of those things where you just need to get reps in. So he needs to set you up in situations and practice where you can just get used to and getting the headsets out and calling it and really simulating those game day simulations as best as possible. One of the favorite coordinators I ever worked for was Brent Guy. He was with Terrell Suggs at Arizona State when they set the sack record. He was our defensive coordinator at Tulsa. He used to have me just put together, when we were playing a team, 80 plays of formations that he was going to see. He would make a call down in distance, and then I'd push play and show him the play so he can make a decision on if he made the right call or not. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. But I think we all know when the lights turn on and it's that first time doing it, all bets go out the window. There's nothing, you no idea what's going to show up and what to expect. And so when there's uncertainty there, that's always something I'm looking to play.
Yeah, and we actually see in the NFL, I'm trying to remember the team. I think it's the Ravens, the 30-year-old play, a guy who came over from the Bears. He was the OC, but he wasn't calling plays because Ben Johnson was, and now he's going to call plays for the first time. It definitely concerns me. Like you said, when you brought it up for the college game, I can certainly respect that and understand where you're coming from in that regard. Zach, really appreciate your time and your insight. A lot of good stuff. I feel like I could pick your brain forever. So I encourage everyone to go check him out at Coach Biggs CFB on Twitter. Zach, appreciate it, man.
Yeah, absolutely, Doug. Thanks for having me on. The only thing that was negative is I was on last week and one of my good Tulsa coaching buddies from 6 weeks, I haven't talked to him in 6 months, texted me and said, hey, if you're going to be on TV a little more, put some Just for Men in your beard, getting a little gray. So looking a little better when I show up on the camera today. So I appreciate you having me.
All right. Good stuff. Yeah, you got to do what you need to know. It's good to have mentors in all facets of life. All right. That's
right. Absolutely.
Zach Bigelow, college football handicapper, who is joining us via the Progressive guest line. I have a few best bets for Monday, some on the diamond, one in the WNBA. I'm even looking ahead to the Tuesday slate in the WNBA. We'll talk some more futures. We'll wrap things up straight ahead as we roll on here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Wrapping things up here on Cashing Out, I'm Doug Kazarian here in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. Dustin Sweetelson, we'll be back in studio Monday night and throughout the rest of the week as he gets you ready for, gosh, college football is less than 2 weeks away. We have week zero games. So in 2 weekends, we're going to be having football that really counts. And obviously we have the NFL preseason going on. Tons of good stuff. But baseball's alive and well. We had crazy outcomes in a lot of things. Like the Mariners hung on Sunday Night Baseball. 3-2 winners as road underdog. The Dodgers lose 3-4 at home to the Brewers. So the Milwaukee Brewers now have the best record in the National League. And the Braves have the second best record. So the Dodgers, if the playoffs started today, they would not even have a bye. So they got a lot to figure out. Maybe a trip to Coors Field will solve those woes because that's where they go on Monday. And maybe the pitching prop of Blake Snell, who's the starting pitcher for the Dodgers, to go over his strikeouts is a good play. It's only 6.5. And that was a bet courtesy of Logan Windsor, who joined us earlier on the show. And he had a few player props that he liked, but I thought the Blake Snell one over 6.5 Ks really stood out. He's already started once. That was last week at home against the Royals since returning from injury for the Dodgers. He had 10 Ks, 84 pitches. So wasn't exactly a short leash, you know? So I think Snell can get there. Always an unknown pitching at Coors Field, the altitude and the spin rate and the drop in your off-speed stuff. It just doesn't move at Coors Field like it does at sea level everywhere else. So that's the concern with that. But I am going to tail him on the over 6.5 Ks. He talked about a double result that I found fascinating. We know double results from football and basketball, right? One team to lead at half, the other team to win. It's a combined parlay of 6-1, 8-1. Well, he liked it in the Mets Padres game. You like the Mets to win the first five and the Padres to win the game. You can get about 10-1 or 8-1, depending if you want to lay a half run in the first five. I think that's really interesting. I've heard about him, played it a couple times with football and basketball, just not in baseball. So I think that could be a fun approach in that one. We also started off, our first guest was really fun as well. And we broke down Monday's baseball card as well with Mick Chiarella from Fantrax. He's a senior analyst there, and he was very chalky, and that sometimes that happens, especially when it's a reduced card like we have on Monday. He liked the Dodgers run line to get back on track, also like the Phillies run line, and I do too. Ridiculous splits for Christopher Sanchez at home. His ERA is like 1.5 ish, on the road over 4. Think about that. Sanchez had some loose Cy Young discussion earlier this year, started the All-Star game in Philly for the National League. He's elite with all his, you know, key pitches, the changeup particularly, but he's got an ERA over 4 on the road. But at home, where the Phillies are on Monday against the Marlins, he's lights out statistically. So I do like the Phillies. The offense may have been starting to pick up a little bit. Arias now batting cleanup. Schwarber or Harper, one or two in the lineup, and Schwarber had a couple bombs in the Field of Dreams. So maybe the Phillies are in a bet-on spot, but I like them first five, -0.5. Against the Marlins. And a couple other props. That was a fun one that Mick had. The futures market. Alec Burleson of the Cardinals and Jordan Walker. You can bet on their futures. They're only a few RBIs behind the leaders. Who's going to finish with the most RBIs in all of baseball? Not just the National League. So a couple Cardinals batters in that regard. And then we took a look at some futures in both college football and NFL. And NFL had a couple guests. Nick Whalen, we discussed a lot. The Lions over 10.5. He's all in on the Detroit. So over 10.5 wins. Lions in the index bet to finish with the number one seed in the NFC, and even Dan Campbell at 25-1 to win Coach of the Year. So that's some interesting angles there. I can get behind that. I think the Lions are going to be really potent. They have a new play caller, though. Remember last year, Dan Campbell, midseason, had to take over play calling duties, and they've had a trouble staying healthy the last few seasons. What, you know, typically injuries are random. Sometimes they're not. Depending how what you think of the conspiracy theories with the 49ers and the nuclear plant nearby, I believe it is. So maybe that's part of their issues. Something to keep in mind. He also liked the Vikings over 8.5 wins. I can't get there. I really respect and am high on Kevin O'Connell and the defensive coordinator, Flores. Like, they've been elite. But I think that's a really competitive division. And Kyler Murray could, Sam Darnold, obviously Kevin O'Connell did it with Sam Darnold. That was really impressive. Can he do the same with Kyler Murray, who brings in a running dimension? And then some of these guys are fast. Murray's different. He's a little jitterbug, right? Like, he definitely makes plays with his legs. Similar, different style, but similar to that extent, like Lamar Jackson. They're in a world of their own. Like, Jalen Hurts runs differently than Lamar Jackson. Like, Kyler Murray is different in that regard. So I can get behind it. I wouldn't be shocked. Like, I'm not betting the opposite. I just don't want to have to, like, sweat it out. And my favorite futures, though, the Falcons under 7.5 wins. That schedule is ridiculous. They may play like 10 playoff teams in a row or something like that. It's just insane how difficult that schedule is. And I don't believe in Tua. I don't believe in Penix. I think they have a lot of problems. There's a reason they're the fourth favorite. So they're the long shot of the NFC North. Now, it's not huge odds, but they're expected to finish fourth. So I don't think I see over 7.5 wins in that regard. And we just spoke to Zach Bigelow. That was a really enjoyable college football discussion. Again, the season is just around the corner, and I'm fascinated by this Lane Kiffin thing. Typically, I get so sort of turned off, and it's a saturated storyline, and I'm just so annoyed. It's like, all right, we get it, Lane Kiffin. I am very curious to see how this plays out, not only in Baton Rouge, but also in Oxford, Mississippi. How are the Rebels going to respond? Yes, they had that high energy going on at the beginning of this, you know, the tenure of post-Lane Kiffin, which was the playoffs, and Pete Golding was the defense coordinator, took over as the interim head coach, later got the full-time job, and I thought it was, you know, great performance. They had Chantless at quarterback, but can he really take care of an entire offseason, budget for the season in terms of play call and just everything? It's a lot of moving parts, and it's a very competitive SEC. They have to play 9 games now within the conference. It's a lot to ask. Obviously, in that late September game, they'll be fired up for LSU and Kiffin to come in to Oxford. I can only imagine the atmosphere there, but I could see Ole Miss struggling. But Zach was saying he believes in him, at least initially, the first year post the coaching departure. But he loves Chambliss, thinks Golding will keep the train on the tracks, at least for the first season. Makes sense. The schedule's not incredibly daunting. I do agree with the fate of A&M. I like Mike Elko a lot, and maybe that 12th man College Station will be the difference, but that schedule can be tricky, but they might start 5-1 or something ridiculous. So maybe an in-season win total play is probably what we're going for, because they are very backloaded in terms of the difficulty of their opponents. And he had some week 0 and some week 1 college plays we didn't have time to get into. Wake minus 22.5 against lowly Akron. And then Pitt, who he likes, Narduzzi, and the Panthers coming into the season, he's laying the 15.5 as well. I'm focused more on the present day. I talked about some baseball plays I liked. I am going to tail Logan with that pitching prop over 6.5 Ks for Blake Snell. I also like the Padres, but I'm backing off a little bit. My favorite play is the Tigers and the Pirates over 8. I think it should be 8.5 or 9. So I think that's too short of an over-under. And then Monday, there's only one game in the WNBA. I like the Valkyries minus the 6.5. I'm not playing it yet because Jessica Shepherd, their starting center, has been great. It was an offseason acquisition in terms of free agency. She's missed a few games. She might return. Now, AZ Fudd is still out. Isaiah James still out. So the backcourt is hurting without Fudd, especially defensively. And if Shepherd plays, I still think the Valkyries can run him out of the gym because she doesn't play a whole lot of defense, but she's a huge weapon offensively. So I'd be looking to face lay the points, the 6.5 with the Valkyries. I just think I need a little more information, but I just think the Valkyries are just too good defensively against Paige Beckers and company, and then too good offense. The Wings don't guard shooters, and Valkyries shoot the ball from 3 the most. So I just don't think they're going to be able to guard them, and it's going to be open gym shooting for the Valks, but I think they're missing a couple players as well. Salam, who's the favorite to win 6th player of the year, missed the last game. So I want to revisit this on Monday, but that's where I'm headed at least. And on Tuesday, I'm looking to fade the Indiana Fever. They've been a nice covering machine, but now they got to go to Toronto. Tempo starting to get healthier, plus 9.5. They had a 5-game road trip, were really out of gas at the end, but now they've had almost a week off. And I think the Tempo plus 9.5 at home, by the way, that game should fly over. I think we should see 200 points in that game. So that's my early reads of the Tuesday WNBA slate, just what you've always been hoping for. By the way, tomorrow, Monday, Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis kick off the morning on VSiN by the Books at 7 a.m. Eastern. On the show, former NFL GM Marty Herney has his best plays in the NFL. Then at 10 a.m., Gil Alexander and Matt Brown are on a numbers game. Prop Points takes over at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's all right here on VSiN, the sports betting network. They'll have Follow the Money after that, and then primetime into the night, and then Dustin Sweetelson will be here in this studio for Cashing Out. So this wraps up the weekend. I had a really good time Saturday and Sunday. For those that tuned in, appreciate your welcoming me in. Hope you enjoyed the guests, because I certainly did. We covered a lot. WNBA, baseball, football, both college and pro. Lot going on in the sports world. And this is, you know, this is time where we survive the summer. This is where it's starting to heat up. with all this offseason talk with football and checking out the future. So VSiN, by the books in the morning at 7 a.m. Eastern. Dave and Jensen will have you covered. Appreciate you allowing us to chat a little bit here on Cashing Out on VSiN.